Okay, is there a pen on your desk somewhere?
It's down here.
All right, recording ready? Reminder to the public, this meeting is being recorded. Is there any public comment on non-agenda items? Seeing and hearing none, is there anything a trustee would like removed from the consent agenda? If not, I will entertain a motion to approve it.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
JJ?
Yay.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Okay, number one, Walt, will you bump this along because you were not here at the last meeting? We didn't want to do this without you, but we were thinking about just increasing the contribution to the capital funds to 5% from 2.
Sure. And I'm assuming we're working off the same base then that we, just looking at it, increasing it. So in your packet, there is a little spreadsheet that Cheryl and I put together that has some information with regard to revenue and expenses, net revenue. And the budget expenditures only include operating expenditures, doesn't include bond or capital expenditures. And so what we're trying to do is, and on the revenue side, we included operating taxes, interest on our monies with the county, and our entitlement share from the state. Those are kind of predictable components to our revenue structure. Items not included in that revenue amount are the taxes for the bond payment, donations and grants, and the on-behalf payment for FERS. And so what we're trying to do is look at the net revenue, so to speak, defined in that manner that gives us an idea of what kind of contributions we can make to our capital reserve fund. So if you look at those numbers, in 2017, we have a net revenue of $144,500 based on a revenue of $902,500 and expense of $758,000. And going up to 2022, fiscal year 2022, revenues are $1,468,000 and change. Operating expenses are $1,058,000 and change. So net of about almost $410,000. And so doing a simple compound annual growth rate calculation on that, looking at compound annual growth rate for the revenue, expenditure growth, and the growth in the difference, you can see that you end up with about a 10.2% growth in revenues over that span, a growth rate of about nearly 7% in expenditures, operating expenditures, or again over that same time span, and which results in a net of 23%.
That was the old one.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl.
I was going to say anything because I didn't want to be stupid.
So I was looking at my old sheet here. Thank you, Cheryl. We adjusted where this came about is we had to adjust for on behalf for 2021 and 2022. And so once we did that, that changed some of the numbers. So revising what I said earlier, compound annual growth rate on revenue is about 11%, on expenditure is about 5%, and the growth rate on the difference is about nearly 32%. So what that says is that we're in an environment where our tax revenues are growing at a faster rate than our expenditures. And if we can do that, obviously we're in a position where we can substantially increase our contribution to capital reserves. And so we shouldn't have a problem starting at that $300,000 base. We shouldn't have a problem bumping up our contributions. And we'll note that even at the 5% growth rate, there's a near-term within, what, the next couple of years, there's a near-term deficit.
Right.
And so if the valley continues to grow at this rate, or particularly our district, we should be able to possibly meet that contribution. And if we, or those capital requirements. But if we don't, I mean, there's been some discussion about kind of delaying capital expenditures, or kind of spreading that out a little bit so that we can have a positive cash flow on our capital expenditures. But once we get past that point, there's another time period, what, 10 or 12 years down in the future, even at the 5% rate. That,
right.
If we can start out with this larger base, and even if things slow down and we don't get the same type of growth rates that we're realizing here in the last few years, it should put us in a pretty good position to meet those that capital replacement plan. And so bottom line, I guess I would suggest that the board not necessarily make this something that's concrete, but I would suggest that the board make a resolution to, basically make that level of contribution to meet or exceed that 5%, and leave some latitude so that should something happen and staff needs to address some issues that occur beyond our budget expectations, mm-hmm. that we're able to do that without having to, you know, commit ourselves to something that's in concrete. That would be my suggestion.
Board discussion?
That's my only question, is how, when we look at the unknowns and then we look at the station stuff on Beach Hill in the next 5 to 10, how does that pencil out? Does that leave us enough flexibility there?
Well, I think, and Brian may want to weigh in on this, I think what it said, this exercise says, unless we have extraordinary gains in our revenue, I think what this exercise suggests to me is that we may want to be careful about allocating too many funds to that project. I think we, you know, along the lines of what we discussed earlier, is perhaps using some of the funds that we're able to squirrel away for kind of conceptual drawings, you know, preliminary architectural work that we can use to have a conversation with the constituents to propose that project, and not necessarily rely on funds to pay off that structure. I think in my mind, we're gonna have to look at bonding as much as this project was done.
Gives us much more operational flexibility.
Right, gives us much more operational flexibility.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yep. Operational and capital replacement flexibility.
Yeah,
which I think if we lock ourselves into, say putting $50,000 or $100,000 per annum towards paying off a new structure over there, that might put us in a position that might be uncomfortable in the future.
Paul got robbed.
Yeah, exactly. Paul got robbed. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And consider too the money we're putting away. My hope is here in the spring or going into the next year that I can provide the board with a plan for improvement out at Cottonwood also. Not necessarily something we have to lock into and do, but something that we could look at doing to improve that station and bring it up to kind of what we need as a fire district and our training center. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the new station, I think I totally agree with what the board has done up to this point, and using the money we have for the concept work. But once we talk about going into construction, I think that's where we should definitely look at asking the taxpayers to support that project by a bond or whichever direction we plan on going.
Do you two have a feel on the capital replacement schedule? It's new, and you haven't had much track record to say this jives with the actuals. We really didn't need that, or we really needed more than that. A couple more years before that starts to settle out a little bit, and are you guessing that you may have, you guessed a little high, or are you feeling like you're pretty as close as you can get?
I mean, over this, I would say Jason did a good job over the past several years, 8 to 10, of really saving and getting some funds into this capital replacement. As far as target, I think we've been pretty close because we are hitting some pretty big projects with engines and such that we do have the funds to go forward with those. There's just some kind of wild card things. I don't know that we necessarily predicted to 100% of the radio system and what that impact was going to be on us. So I would say we're pretty close to on track. I mean, you can see in the spreadsheet of the capital improvement or replacement plan. I mean, it kind of comes in waves, and we can work on over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years to even that out a little bit. Again, the last few years have been kind of a hard hit. There's just a lot of things that have fallen into this last couple of years with radios, SCBAs, vehicles, that have kind of what creates those waves. So I think we're on track. I think over the next 3 to 5, I think the plan will kind of reflect a little more even flow of what we're doing.
So just for a little bit more historical background, I mean, you guys, basically this replacement plan, you and Jason started this probably, it's been 3 to 4 years, somewhere in there ago. So this has kind of been a work in progress. So we've actually used this plan in some fashion, and obviously it's a plan, not necessarily, you know, again, not cast in concrete. So, and then it's been updated to reflect, you know, brought to date.
Actuals.
Yeah, current pricing and that kind of thing. So, you know, that those numbers have been updated in the inventory of equipment and that sort of thing, of what it, in today's dollars, what the replacement cost is. And so I think, you know, over the years, the last couple of years, we've done pretty, I mean, we identified, you guys had the SCBAs and radios, it just, some of those things with the frequency issues and that sort of thing ended up being more expensive than you originally had planned for.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of unknowns, and I applaud you for even tackling that, but that's the scary part, is the unknowns about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, as we move forward over the next few years with the plan, is to not necessarily go full throttle into it and keep a balance of some funds in there, even if that means picking and choosing what's most critical. But not necessarily just because the plan says we need to spend $500,000 this year that we just go out and spend that and drain that account down.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah. But I think the bottom line is that we're fortunate enough to be in a good position to make really, you know, pretty substantial contributions to our capital replacement. It's the old saying that even a blind dog can find an acorn once in a while, and I think much like we did with our refinancing of the bond, you know, we're kind of in a position where we've got growth going on right now, which may help us to address this, you know, the deficit that'll be coming up. Yeah, and along with spreading out some of those purchases, I think we're in a pretty good position, but not in perhaps a good enough position that we can start allocating money to your original question.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I applaud the work and the history. Thank you, guys. But yeah, it's a little spooky.
And the good thing we have going for us is the codes we do have and the operation we have. Obviously, we need to keep up with increased costs of operating, but at least going forward the next few years, I don't know that we'll have any big need to increase the operating budget. So as our budget increases with the growth and new development, that just gives us the opportunity to better fund this plan by not needing to increase operations greatly.
Right. We'll always have small things. It's one of the things that Cheryl and I noted on subscriptions. You know, now that we're having to pay for the fees for the vehicles on the pads.
The iPads, yeah.
You know, that's another cost that we're just going to have to throw in. But, you know, that falls within that realm of that 5% or, 11%. You know, somewhere in that, you know, neighborhood, we can we can probably accommodate those types of expense increases.
Any more board discussion?
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical on the 5% staying that way. Mm-hmm. Just by the read of the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Let's make hay while the sun's shining, huh?
Yeah.
You got a motion you want
to? I do. The Pilot Rural Fire Department resolves to pursue the financial planning strategy, including a 5% annual increase in capital reserve contributions, with the understanding that we maintain flexibility.
Is there any public comment on the motion before the board? Is there a second?
Second.
JJ?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Okay, pre-design discussion. That must be you.
It is. I was hoping I'd have an actual plan to give you guys, but I just didn't quite get there for this month, so I'll keep working on that. But just kind of wanted to give you guys a little bit of an update of what I've been doing to kind of get us ready for this project. And there's a couple things I wanted to bring up for you guys. So I did meet, trying to do some what of long-term planning of what the west end of the fire district will look like, trying to look into the crystal ball of city growth, growth in our own district. And I did meet with a couple of folks from the city, the fire chief and operations chief, just to discuss kind of what Bozeman Fire's plan is going forward for the west end of kind of the Huffine corridor in the west end of the valley. And it is an interesting discussion. Obviously, the city, they have their growth map, which just takes everything, but that's not necessarily realistic. So kind of where we landed and what my best vision is going to be, at least somewhat going forward, is there's still and always will be for the next 10 to 20 years of fire service from the fire district on the west end of our current fire district. There's a lot of open land, especially north of Huffine, that will most likely be annexed into the city as the city grows down to, you know, roughly Love Lane. You know, when you look at barriers that the city's going to run into, going west, they'll eventually hit Love Lane, which bumps them into the Four Corners Water Sewer District, which services Black Bull, our new White Horse subdivision at Love and Baxter. And there's just going to be the discussion once it gets there is how that water and sewer district stands. Same exists for the south end of Huffine, where the current Ray Water and Sewer District is. That incorporates, you know, the Wrestler buildings of the Chevrolet, Toyota, Big Sky RV, Denny Menholt, Honda, then Woodland Parks and all the development behind that. Had meetings with Gene Cook Development and Highlight Engineers, who are doing a lot of that development project, and just trying to gauge what they see as, you know, once the city arrives at their doorstep, you know, will they step in or step around them? And their kind of view of it is, you know, they're improving infrastructure for the Ray Water and Sewer District. They're continuing to do new wells, expand the sewer capability. So they don't necessarily have in their long-term planning of it annexing into the city. Now, all this work we can do to try to predict what our level of service needs to be. When it comes down to it, it's 51% of the vote that's going to decide whether the sewer district, water sewer district, stands or they go into the city. It gives me a little bit of confidence to say that at least, you know, going down the next life of a fire station, that the water and sewer districts will stand because they are currently improving their districts, where if it was an aging system and they're just trying to get it along until the city's there and the city can hook up and deliver service. That's not really what we have going on. They're improving their system. Their infrastructure is fairly new. A lot of that development obviously has happened in the last 10 years, so it's not an aging system. So what I kind of discussed with the city officials is what I wanted to avoid was us building a new Ray fire station and then the city marching north of Huffine and building a fire station at Goochill and Huffine, kitty corner from us or something like that. And I think we kind of came to a point where we agreed upon that's not at least the vision of that Huffine corridor. That the city is eyeing additions to their service going west, but they're more looking kind of a little further north. They're kind of looking around the Billion complex area. So that puts us close, but not across the street. And just trying to really do our homework for you guys to say, is that really the best location for a fire station? Now, when you look at that location, and this was part of something I discussed with the city, was, you know, this plan for the fire district has been in place for almost 10 years now, from when the Ray Fire Service Area purchased that land, and kind of thinking that that's the next spot for our fire station. And honestly, what our service delivery currently is, that's where it really needs to be. One, it's at the good arterial roads of Goochill going south, Huffine going west. So the location is good. And for ISO rating for insurance, our furthest protection to the north is almost exactly 5 miles from where that lot and station currently stand. So obviously we would want to maintain that for our taxpayers. So that location is really where we want to be. And I think, you know, I just wanted to kind of do my homework to give you guys the best recommendation is should we, you know, as it has changed in the last 10 years, is that still where we should be looking? And I think we are in the right spot. One, you know, we got a very good deal on that piece of property, and to obviously the value of that has increased. We could go to sell it and try to relocate, but that's going to be a huge...
Doesn't that have a caveat on that? That if we sell it...
It's not any longer...
Okay. That disappeared. We did get resolved, yeah. So that is where that stands in my long-term growth plan for you guys is. That's where we need to be. I feel comfortable that, you know, that if you guys don't know the Cook development plan for kind of the Woodland Park area is they essentially own ground west to see it'd be Links Lane, where the current kind of commercial development on Huffine is. It's not a very big chunk of ground south of Huffine from where they are to where that line is. And then they own going south to just the other side of where almost if you drew Stuckey across would continue west. And they have it all pre-planned to eventually develop. They're just going phase by phase, marching along. There was some discussion of, you know, the Cooks in Woodland Park's designated an elementary school lot for the Bozeman School District to put his elementary school there. And there was some discussion if that was going to be a Bozeman School District elementary school, would that need to be in the city? And I talked in pretty good depth with the engineers in Cook Development of their kind of conversations with the school board of how they felt with that, and they didn't necessarily feel that it needed to be in the city. It's just they needed to make sure that the water sewer district was going to be able to service an elementary school, and with the infrastructure they have and have planned, basically the school board's comfortable with what they'll be able to provide. And, you know, if you guys pay attention to the news, they delayed school expansion for another few years. So that'll play into it also. But I think we're in the right spot. Other thing I wanted to bring up to you guys, we may have an opportunity to work with an architect for some concept drawings if the board's interested. I don't know, JJ, if the name Orrin Schumacher sounds familiar. He randomly stopped by Sourdough just to say hi. And he was a volunteer for several years with Ray Sourdough, or with Sourdough at that time, possibly. Was an MSU architecture student and graduated. The architecture firm he works for is opening a Bozeman office, and just happened to mention to him of the projects we're working on, and he said he'd be happy and excited to work with us. I do have a meeting. I'm going to meet with him next week to just kind of talk what his thoughts are as far as what our thoughts are, to make sure we're in alignment of kind of what we want to do, and then get some pricing of what some concept ideas would be and bring that to you guys to decide if that's for surely what we want to do. But that's kind of where I am with the project. Like I said, hopefully we've been doing review with staff. The current residents we have, I've been surveying all the residents that have lived in this building since we constructed it, just trying to get a good needs assessment list of what we need for the west end of the fire district. So hopefully here in the near future I can present that to you guys.
Great. Board discussion?
In your conversations with the city, any talk on Covered Wagon?
There's a lot of talk on Covered Wagon. I don't know that anybody has a good feeling for it. If you guys, Covered Wagon's an interesting situation in general, that they get their water service from the city, that since that trailer park was created, that back in that day, the city agreed to provide them water. And I got a feeling that's what, you know, when the city says they want to annex in the areas that are already getting city services, I imagine that's what they're talking about, is Covered Wagon.
And Western Drive, probably. No, that's all water. Well
and septic, yeah. The only two areas, you know, of all of our chunks in the city that currently receive city services, Covered Wagon is the only one I can. The only other piece that I know of is the old Story Mill Fire District that the city fire department covers. Everybody else is well in septic system and not receiving city services. So I don't know. I'm sure if they have the opportunity, they'd jump on it. But you know, we discussed a little bit that, you know, just in the eyes of kind of Bozeman right now, that's a big chunk of affordable housing, of what they called it. And I think there's some thought of, is that really the best idea right now, is to just bulldoze that trailer court and
turn it into expensive,
yeah, condos or apartments, whatever.
Any conversations on a joint facility thing or something? Did you guys broach that at all?
We did discuss that. And we agreed to disagree. You know, we talked about, you know, there would be some benefits in that. Although, you know, for what I see, what our needs of are in the fire district, and then what the city is probably going to need for their facility, I'm not sure it would fit on our lot if that's what the location we would decide. I just don't know that we have quite the same vision as what the city fire department is looking for in their facility. So I didn't get a good feeling like that would be a good road to go down, but it was discussed.
Thank you.
Anything else? Any public comment on the chief's report, on the agenda item? Okay, thank you. Transportation billing rates.
Okay, so there is a spreadsheet that should look fairly familiar. And Chris has really the expert on this one because he's done a lot of work to the spread. So this is really what Steve White had and Pat and Jason had started with. Chris has done an incredible amount of work to bring this up to what we, a little more. What Pat, Steve, and Jason had done were fairly rough predictions, but I think we have this narrowed down to a little bit more of what we actually will be seeing. I'll let Chris kind of talk about what each piece is.
When you go back and look at the call volume and you look at what Alpha Bravo calls we get over the last probably 3 years, we're getting a significant, not a significant, but we're definitely getting an increase in Alpha Bravo calls every year. We're averaging about 10 calls per month for Alpha Bravo, and you figure 50% of those are probably going to be refusals. Now, we haven't been tracking that data very well. We made some changes here just a few months ago that's really helped us extract that data out. But we're going to be in the tune of that. Up front, we're going to be in the tune of about 50 transports probably in that first year, in that range, depending on how things go. So if you look at all the expenses, these are all the expenses that we're already in from before. We kind of updated a little bit of this, but when you take 50 calls and you look at your expenses, we're going to end up with about $29,000 in expenses. And then if we take the revenue, and we did set our collection rate at about 60%, which I think we can do a little better on. With working with Pintler in the past, she's got most of her people up into that 70 to 80% range of collection rates. And so I think we can be in that. It's gonna take us probably 6 months or so to get our guys used to writing that style of report and so that she can collect that from the insurance. So with that 60% collection rate, looking at about a $450 bill for a BLS call. Statewide, when you look at Firebase EMS, the average is about $750 across the state. So $450, we're well under that. You do that, run that for the 50 calls, we're at about $28,000. You look at the delinquencies, you look at what we make for the non-delinquencies, the 8% that we're going to need to pay Pintler for the collection cost, and then less our expenses, we end up at about $11,000 in the hole at the end of the day. Now, having said that, if you look at the whole the hole below, where we actually look at capital replacement costs, if we say that we want to replace that entire ambulance with all the equipment on it in 10 years, put all that stuff together from the ambulance to the cop to the life pack to the stair chair, over in 10 years, it's going to cost us about $253,000 to replace that setup, which is pretty much right on track. That's a 3% increase in equipment every year, based out over 10 years. So if we could actually put $25,000 away into our capital reserve, we'll be at a net zero when it comes time for replacement. Now you can also look at that back over here for 100 calls, go back down to our total billing revenue, we're gonna be about $5,000 in the positive. So we're really fluctuating right on that border where we're like, we're not charging an extravagant amount, right? We're charging well under what the state rate would be, and we're trying to break even pretty much across the board. But when we say we're $11,000 in the hole, we also put $25,000 in the capital reserves out of that collection. So we're getting that money back on 50 calls, and we're putting that into the capital reserves. So that's kind of where we're at with it. You can run those numbers up all the way to 750. per call, and it still puts us in the negative for that first year, honestly, just at a 60% collection rate. But that's where we're at. And so I played with those numbers all the way from like $350 all the way up to $750. $450 is kind of average. If you look at what Medicaid pays for Montana, they're at about $425, $435, I think, this year for that collection rate.
They're always low.
They're super low. It's a government set rate, right? When we bill those people, that's what we can expect, is right in that range of, I think it's $435 for the collection fee. When you look at everybody's insurance, you're all over the board, because maybe Brian's insurance says, well, we're going to cover 80% of the transport, you got to cover 20%. Whereas you look at my insurance, I have a $5,000 deductible. And so that's $450 right out of my pocket, right? So looking at insurance, it's really hard to gauge where we could be by just collecting from the insurance. So we kind of had to set, at least when I was doing this and doing the math, we kind of had to set a standard fee. We said we're going to charge X number of dollars. And what's that going to get us in the end? Well, that's going to get us our capital reserves to replace that equipment in 10 years when it's...
Are we still thinking a different charge for residents versus non-residents?
So it is, yeah. So what we discussed earlier in the year, which kind of had the most popularity, was two separate rates depending on the address of our patient to be transported. If they were an in-district resident, we talked about giving them a discounted rate versus if they were, you know, in the city or out of the area, of giving them a different rate. And that's where the $450 to $750. And Chris did, you know, check with Pimler, who has bills for most of the state of Montana, and on average that BLS transport rate is at $750. You know, we had talked about earlier of just trying to, right, not leaving money on the table with all of this, that, you know, not billing too low and not collecting what we could. And that kind of drove the $450 amount based off of what Medicaid, Medicare is paying out, would get us right in that range. So, yeah, in district, that's why the in district residents are $450 and out of district is $750.
And Chris, just for people listening to this, can you just tell us what Alpha Bravo calls mean?
We base the calls on, they get triaged from an alpha call all the way up to an echo call. Echo being the most severe calls, Alpha Bravo being more minor calls. And as a BLS agency, we feel that we can cover those calls and do a great job of covering those calls.
Something to consider also is that $750, you know, even for non-district, for district residents, you know, what they, if AMR transports them today, they're going to see a significantly higher bill of than what we're proposing. So, trying to give, you know, a little bit of a break for people who are already funding the fire district, but still getting our services. And, you know, when it can kind of put everybody back when we talk about being in the hole, but just consider also that this is not completely a new startup service for us, in a way that we already have been operating an ambulance as a backup to AMR and an ambulance to utilize on different incidents in our district. So, yes, we're looking in the hole, but if you take out the fund or the revenue altogether, I mean, it's back to the capital replacement plan of of funding to replace it. So, you know, to say we're not in the green, well, we're not in the green to fund a piece of the capital replacement plan. It's not necessarily doing ambulance transport is now dragging us into the red. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever revenue we can make off of transport is going to better help fund.
Right. Because just as a reminder, our capital replacement plan now does include replacement. So this would be offsetting something that's in the existing plan.
Correct.
Yeah. So just to, as a point of clarification.
Right.
And the rationale for collecting this versus any other service that we run is that, as I understand it, this is traditionally what people do. They collect fees for ambulance service rather than, we got a different fee for wildland, we got a different fee for structure fires, which is not where we want to go.
Yeah, and it's just, yeah, not leaving money on the table. If Medicaid, Medicare is going to pay it out.
Right, there's a whole infrastructure of reimbursement set up for this particular aspect.
Yeah.
So one topic I'd like to bring up too is just by way of insurance to our constituents. I mean, there are a couple of things that could potentially happen. Should AMR pull out on short notice, or we have a large event that occurs, having this resource in place. I mean, you mentioned the Alpha Bravo echo call. So we would have the capability to address echo calls. It might be argued that we don't have full capability, but we do have pretty good capability to address echo calls in the event that we have something that requires all of the existing AMR resources in the valley at one point in time, or if we have a deficiency for a period of time if AMR were to leave the provision of resources.
Is
that correct?
Yeah. That is correct.
So from a risk management standpoint, I guess I would, even at a 50 call level with a deficit at a reasonable cost structure, from a risk management standpoint, with regard to providing services to our constituents, it's a pretty minor deficit in my mind.
So one thing I'm looking for from the board, and whether you guys want to deliberate on this more or want more information, we need to, in order to push our ambulance transport plan ahead, we need to provide Pintler with what our billing rate is going to be, so we can kind of get that piece set up. And that's what we were looking for a little bit from you guys tonight, is if you guys are comfortable with that billing rate. And we can, if so, we can give that information to Pintler to move forward on.
How's the board feel about that? 450, 750?
Positive.
Board discussion on that? Pretty good?
Sounds fine to me. We could always change it next year if we decide that it needs
a
little
increase.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
I have a follow-up.
Yeah.
So as far as the 450, 750, if we're in district, no matter what, it's 450. I mean, if someone gets in a car wreck that doesn't live in district, or is it, do they have to live in district?
Right, they have to be there. So in order to, the PCR, the patient care report, which they're going to be billed off of, they have to provide their home address.
Okay, so if I'm in a friend's house in district, or and I live out of district.
Right, so if say one of your friends was visiting you and he got into a car accident or whatever, and his address is a City of Bozeman address, he will get billed a $750 rate. Versus if you get in the car accident and your address is Highlight Foothills, you would get the $450 rate.
Cool.
But the bonus is if you get in a car wreck at 7th and Main and we have to go, you're going to get $450.
Yeah, right.
So my follow-up question is, in the last 2 months, since we've recently discussed it, or the last 3 months, how has AMR's performance and availability consistent, stayed the same, got worse?
They've been in a downhill slide for quite a while now. It's fluctuating, so a lot of it, is blamed on the pandemic and paramedic schooling closing down and causing a backlog in paramedics being available. But they continue to struggle with staffing greatly. And in my chief's report, we're working on trying to create a contract that they are going to hold them to a standard of service. But it fluctuates daily. Some days they'll be fully staffed up with their 3 ambulances, and the next day they'll be down to 1. And now they're fluctuating with their ALS ambulances versus BLS ambulances. You know, when I look at it as the fire chief of our district and providing service, so Alpha and Bravo calls currently go to a BLS unit for AMR. And that BLS unit is coming out to our fire district to transport a patient in.
Yeah.
And they're getting, that district resident is getting a significantly higher bill than what we're proposing.
Sure.
Where we could deliver the exact same level, and in my opinion, a better level of service.
It's a waste of resources.
Right.
Too, to have them come to us when we can do that.
Yeah. So to answer your question, JJ, it's still in decline. I wouldn't say we've seen an improvement.
Thank you.
How many events are there that one ambulance is satisfactory?
I mean, a majority of EMS events, one ambulance is what's needed. It's just, you know, as the area is growing, and that's a challenging part for AMR is, the area is significantly growing, and they're not able to significantly grow their operations.
Yeah, they're running on the same three ambulances they had 5 years ago or whatever.
Right.
5 years ago, there
longer.
Was five ambulances running.
Yeah.
That's a problem, yeah.
Yeah, and the lines in the graph are going different directions.
It's getting there.
Just for the board's information, in the past 2 months, we've averaged 3.5 transports outside of the district, just helping our neighbors when AMR is unavailable.
Yeah.
So
3.5.
Yeah, I think we did four in November and 3 in October.
Really?
There was a day a couple weeks ago where we did 2 transports in 1 day.
One day.
Because AMR was unavailable.
Okay, any public discussion?
Yeah, Michael Buffington. Volunteer. I definitely think it's really important to charge as little as possible to the taxpayers.
Any further public comment? Any further board discussion? Got your marching orders?
Yep. You want to?
Do you need a motion?
Yeah.
Do
we need a motion? Motion to approve the billing structure as presented by administrators.
Any public comment on the motion for the board? Is there a second?
Second.
Justin, did you second that? Okay. JJ?
Yes.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Okay, fire chief's report. I sent an email just to, I don't know if I copied you guys on all of it, but back to Cheryl, I don't see why item B needs to be a standing agenda item. Northwest Energy Bill reduction, it's performing as.
As advertised?
Yeah, saving us lots of money.
It's saving us money.
So.
All right, Fire Chief's report. I apologize, you guys got this late. Like Sheriff mentioned, I didn't quite get this out in when I was deployed to Denton recently, so I apologize about getting out late. Still seeing an increase in the call volume. We're already, December 1st, we're above what we ran for the year last year, and we still have the month of December to go. Roster is really unchanged. Resident situation is the same. Resident system is full. And I will, one thing I'll add to that resident piece is, so you guys know, we do have a wait list of people wanting to get into the fire stations. So I'll include that in there also. Our non-resident day staffing is still rolling and working good. Trainings are unchanged. As I mentioned, the ambulance contract for Gallatin County, it's still in draft form. We've kind of presented as fire districts utilizing AMR what our wants are, and that has been given back to the county to draft out into a contract, and then it's going to be brought back to us to review. So that is the... That's where that's at. We helped Central Valley with one structure fire on November 23rd. Fall Recruit Academy is still rolling along, and they should be wrapping up here. There's a potential for them to be done before Christmas, but we're looking mid-January. Still working on the acoustics. Hopefully we'll get that wrapped up here. New command truck, Command 6-1 is in service. Command 6-2 is in the shop right now getting radios and lights put in. And we already talked about the data collection for the Ray Fire Station. So our ambulance transport plan, tried to kind of give you guys a line out of where we are as far as staff on getting that program up and running. So the medical billing rate was one of the things on the Pintler checklist that we needed to get done. Our new ambulance is done. It is out of the Demir's factory. And I got a further update than even what is in here today that it made it into the U.S. from Canada, and it's in transport from Ohio to Kalispell, where Avgar's facility is. So we're potentially looking at a delivery date of next Wednesday of that unit. Again, Chris is doing a lot of work with this transport plan. Chris and Cheryl are kind of doing the checklist for Pintler billing to get that lined up. Chris is leading the discussions with Dr. Beer, our medical control officer, to really line out this is what Highlight's going to do, and obviously medical control officer, we need him to agree to it. Mac is working on, so for several months now, we've incorporated our Wednesday night training into a multi-company training where we're kind of splitting the group into three, and everybody is getting EMS on a steady basis. So that's been kind of addressing this transport. And then all the equipment outside of that has been purchased. There's a few things we're still waiting on, obviously the new ambulance. But the stair chairs is the other thing we're still waiting on, which hopefully mid-January. We've had no injuries in the last month and everything is in service.
So ambulance delivered on Wednesday, but in service?
It'll probably be at least 30 to 60 days. We roughly have a date for Harper Shop Industrial Communications to get the radios in it. We save some money by ordering it without any decals on it, and we're just going to have a local shop put some letters and stuff on it. So.
Great.
Are they bringing it here, or you have to go get it?
We have to go get it. We have to go up to Kalispell and pick it up.
So on item 8, with regard to the ambulance contract, so are there multiple districts that are involved in drafting the contract?
There is. So, yeah, with the exception of Big Sky and Central Valley, they're the only two, well, in the city, that do their own transport services currently. Mm-hmm. So every other district is going to be part of this contract. Through a lot of discussions, it was felt like it'd be best to have the county to kind of be the on behalf of the contract holder. So the AMR will sign a contract with Gallatin County and on behalf of all the fire districts that utilize their services. And it's been written into that contract that like us, Highlight, potentially a couple others are looking at doing somewhat of level of service themselves. So that our transport plan won't affect that contract because we're writing in that as a piece of it.
Anything else? Any public comment on the chief's report? Trustee activities. Announcements.
Tomorrow night is Night with Santa, and we just got bailed out, or we were drawing straws tonight on who was putting the suit on. But that's been lined out, so we are good to go.
Papa Ken?
I'm on the wrong side.
6 to 8 tomorrow. I apologize. If you've noticed, we had signs up briefly and took them down. Something happened with the company that does our signage, and they put the wrong date on the signs. We pulled the signs down because of that. So I apologize that that level of advertising we didn't get to.
Okay, next board meeting in January. I'm out of town on the 18th, but that doesn't mean you can't go ahead without me if that works for everybody else.
Cheryl is out of town also.
So Cheryl, in the audit presentation, has there been any further?
I have to confirm that. It'll either be January or February.
Okay.
February, we do have a presenter coming in from First West to discuss about the health insurance and possible HSAs or FSAs.
I should be back, but I could possibly be gone on the 18th also.
Want to do the 25th?
That'd probably work better.
25th's good with me.
I got all day to get there and nothing to do.
Unless we have January fires.
Ken, how's the 25th work for you?
Good.
All right, so moved. Anything else anybody got?
Another announcement. I didn't put it in my chief's report, but if you guys keep up with the news, Central Valley has a new interim fire chief, a new interim deputy chief. They're going through some turnover issues over there, so.
It's interim, though. They didn't.
Interim.
They haven't made any personnel actions. Okay.
No, both of them are interim positions, or acting positions.
Acting.
Acting. Yeah, sorry, not interim. Acting.
Did we respond much to the wrecks that we had from all the ice a couple weeks ago?
Oh, yeah.
Has anybody talked to the county about getting some help on Cottonwood and 19th to do something about the ice? Is that
am
I too new?
Yeah, because there's a real complicating factor there in that there's agreements and state roads versus county roads, and I've forgotten what that all is. I think like
19th is a
state road, yeah. So you're trying to deal with MDT.
That's why I got pulled over by the highway patrol.
No, you got pulled over the highway patrol because you were speeding.
Yeah. Correct. But I couldn't figure out why he was here.
Yeah, I don't know that I can offer much about that. I think the county road department does what they can, but.
They're very.
It was seriously bad.
Conservative about you move to Montana and the roads get shitty here.
Get good tires and a four-wheel drive.
Well, I don't know if we got more traffic down here or what, but it was really bad.
Yeah, you got to start slowing down it.
Yeah. Well, the conditions were just perfect.
Yeah.
We still had warm ground underneath. It was just perfect conditions. And then a little bit of sheen in the afternoon, water on top of the ice. It was about as slick as you could get it.
I wonder what our contract is in our neighborhood. When do they start plowing?
There.
I think when we get an appreciable amount of snow,
huh?
When we get an appreciable, the whole thing about the ice that we had was because we didn't get very much snow.
We had
a foot of snow, it wouldn't have been so bad.
They used to have a guy that had a
generator.
Yeah, thank